RCW listening 79.
This is N2OEL.
Oh, Noel, how are you?
Oh, doing reasonably well. Just on my way to Weight Watchers. See how fat I've gotten or lost in the last week.
Okay. I'm up here in Park Ridge. Just left work. On the way home.
I do believe I'm looking at Ton and Groove 4x12. Looks like construction lumber.
I think the only place I have tongue and groove in the house is in my attic, believe it or not.
I have it, believe it or not, on each of my floors. They built my house. They put it on a 45-degree angle, and then they put the floor across. What's interesting is, I would have thought that they would have put it, when they did it, I would think that they would have used at a 90-degree angle. But no. My entire subfloor is about 1-inch wood, 45-degree angle. Then my tongue and groove oak flooring goes on top of that.
I should correct myself. I think all my hardwood floor is tongue and groove. But only in the attic I can see it because they're not quite together. But anyway... how big is that? I think I have like one by six. My hardwood floor is probably only about 3 inches wide.
Well, the reason I know is the previous kitchen floor was plywood, and it was red and yellow squares. And it was really ugly. And it was new in 1950. And it was rotting with the dishwasher and the washing machine had spilled. So we ripped it all up, replaced the subflooring where we had to, and put in tug and groove oak flooring.
Oh, very good. Well, it's nice and sunny out. Even though it's cold out, it's nice and warm in the car with the sun. Didn't have to turn on the heat. Anyway, let's see what's going on at home. Hopefully I got some parts in the mail.
I'm going to go to coffee tomorrow morning, but I suspect it'll be in the rain.
Yeah, the forecast is not good.
What's interesting is I've been experimenting with my GPS. I currently have it on the British accent. That's pretty interesting.
I'm sorry, you have it where?
I sent it over to British accent.
I don't know if I have any different languages on mine. I've never gone through all the menus.
It's my belief that the GPS I read someplace only had 82 words total. So it's not a problem to put in several different languages.
And 2OEL, KO2, okay. Anyway, do you know if Gordon's going to be around for a tech net tonight?
The answer is no.
Are you running for a blitz?
Yes, I know. The answer is he's not going to be.
Okay. Are you running it, or do you know who is?
Yes, on the Baronet last night, he asked me to.
Okay. I'll try and make that later. Unfortunately, I don't have a lot to contribute, and I can't always listen for the full amount of time that it's on. I like to hear in, or listen in for a while.
You know what's nice about these cold days? You can go shopping before you go to a function like Weight Watchers, where you're going to be in there for 40 minutes, and not worry about the produce in your car rotting.
Well, 40 minutes, I don't think you'd worry. Well, it's pretty warm in my car. It must be 80 in my car right now. And that's without turning on the heat or anything. Just from the sun.
Exactly, but on a hot summer day, it can go 140. You'd have your produce pre-cooked.
Anyway, did Rachel figure out last night if her poor signal was a loose connection or was just her location?
I talked to her this morning. She took off, quote, rubber washer, end quote, on the antenna, and she was EFQ. No noise, no nothing.
On my antenna, my NMO mount antenna, if I pull off the antenna part and I look underneath, it's got a little finger that touches, supposed to touch the base. And that finger can move back and forth. So pull the finger out a little bit further. Make a little bit better contact. I don't know if she has the same or if she has a spring or something. Oh, well. At least she knows. I thought she sounded good for a while yesterday, so I don't know what happened in between.
Call, please. Go ahead, caller. Thank you. W2IC, WB2HID. Nothing heard. Thank you, gentlemen. WB2HID, clear. Good day, Gene. Yeah, I'm a great proponent of putting grease on those connections. I actually prefer the stuff that comes out of the silicone. It's called silicone conductive grease, but it's really not conductive. Only the zinc particles are. So if you leave it sit there for a while, there's some really nice grease on the top that you can wipe on things with the zinc coating, and it protects it for a long time. I don't like to put zinc particles on my antenna connections because I figure if the thing wiggles or something and moves, it's going to wear. Whereas if I just put grease, it don't matter. So I shine them up nicely, maybe with a piece of sandpaper, put the grease on to keep it from corroding anymore, slap it together. It's been my solution.
Hello, Gene. Goodbye, Gene. Gene, I saw you posted an ad for the antenna. You got any replies? Curious. You're there. And otherwise, Noel, what grease did you say you use? It's got to be some kind of conductive grease if you're using it in between antenna sections. Otherwise, you're creating a barrier of some sort. But let's see if Gene's still there.
If we remember John Tworski, his electrician, about 20 years ago, he gave me a bottle of what he called silicone conductive grease. And it took me a while to figure out what it is, like 20 years. It's really a silicone-based grease with particles of zinc suspended. What happens is when you use it as this, you're supposed to shake it up, mix it up, put it on, for instance, an electrical connection where the aluminum wires go into a copper receptacle. When you tighten it down, the little zinc particles penetrate the aluminum oxide and the copper oxide, making a beautiful connection. The silicone grease keeps the air from getting to it, so there's no oxidization, no problem with the fact that there's dissimilar metals, because in reality, you ain't getting much contact between the aluminum and the copper. It's aluminum to zinc, zinc to copper.
Okay. For some reason, I thought you said you don't use that grease because of the zinc particles, but okay, I got it right. All right. Anyway, Noel, I'm already in Waldwick and just about home. So I'll wish you a good rest of the evening and maybe catch you on the net later. KO2, okay.
I got to get home early for a change and get on the net. It's a good thing you reminded me. I probably would have forgotten. Have a great day. This is N2 OEO Mobile, still listening.
WB2HID listening.
Hi, Gene. Welcome back.
Noel. Yeah, just a short ride here. I'm just doing some errands, so that's all.
I'm on my way from work to Weight Watchers to get weighed.
I've done that, been there. Been there, done that.
I've been fighting the battles of bulge for many years. It helps me at least not gain.
Roger on that. All right, let me say 7-3s. I'm just about to touch down now. I'm maybe we'll see you tomorrow night. N2OEL, WB2HID.
7-3, WB2HID, N2OEL, Mobile.
KC2SAV listening. KC2SAV listening.
N2OEL Mobile listening.
N2OEL WHCAI calling. Hey Noel, question for you. What net is on tonight?
At 8:30, 443.1, plus 5 meg, PL1413.
What's the title of the net?
And Thursday night 440 net. Then at 9 o'clock on this repeater is Gordon's Technical net.
9 at 9 o'clock on this repeater. Very good. Thank you very much.
Faster and slower. But I never knew what they did for a an aircraft engine. Now, that's how many cylinders is that thing in the aircraft?
It's six cylinders. It's 540 cubic inches, and it makes 235 horsepower. Now, the interesting thing about this engine, it's technically an overhaul from the old engine. It's got the same serial number, but mostly all the parts, except for that data plate, have been changed because we went from flat tappets to roller lifters on the cam. It starts real easy. It runs smooth, and it's nice. You know, the cylinder head temperatures are up there for now. They're running about 400, between 350 and 400, and we're running full throttle there. And that's just because everything's wearing in. You know, as soon as things calm down, those numbers should come down and you know, see around 300 degrees. But it was an okay night, I guess.
That sounds very good. As I remember, when I used to work for Rosemont Engineering, the way we used to determine the cylinder head temperatures, we used to make some equipment that was used for aircraft. As you know, Rosemont makes static tubes and things like that. Most of the stuff is on commercial aircraft. And they had thermocouples embedded in a washer that would go underneath the lug bolt. Is that the technology they still use to determine the cylinder head temperature?
Well, they do have those. They have a thermocouple, a type K thermocouple. I think it's Chromel Alumel. Some of them are not on this engine, but on some engines it's got the it's actually embedded in like spark plug ring, but these engines are cast. Going under a bridge here, so I'm not sure how I'm making the machine, but they have a casting spot for a screw-in adapter, and then there's a quarter-turn adapter on top of that, so there's quick installation and removal of the CHT probes. And I don't know how much of that you heard, but there's one in each cylinder head in this. It's got a full engine analyzer for exhaust gas temperature and CHT.
Okay, very similar to what I'm familiar with those showing. Yep. And of course, the Chromel Alumel Type K is what you use for those temperature ranges. We used to provide them also for jet engines, a regular harness with the sensors in them, which were, you know, rather expensive. A lot of them were for stationary jet turbines, I should say, for, you know, power and stuff like that. But it's always interesting to go in and watch them fire one of those puppies up. It was always the... Sometimes it got quite exciting. But now it sounds like you had lots of fun here tonight, so that's great.
Yep, lots of fun. Maybe sometime I can pick your brain. You can listen to my my little speaker here that I've got hooked to my mobile rig. The fidelity isn't too great, and you sound muffled, but I don't think it's you. It's a lot of people that I hear. I think it's just the wrong kind of speaker. Maybe I can select one that has a little better higher frequency range, because this one puts out a lot of lows, it seems.
I'm using my handy talkie, and this one does sound a little more lows on it. Okay. The external microphone that I have for this HD, which I can't find right now, otherwise I put it on here, actually sounds better than the internal microphone. This is less communications audio. I don't know, it just happened to work out that way, I guess. So it may not be you, it might be, a lot of it might be me also. So trying to get a setup to work good, you always worry about what's going to happen. Now, I changed microphones in the car, and that microphone's got a much higher frequency response, which is really what you want, and I guess I really need that in the HD.
Okay. Yeah, it might be a combination of the two. It's not a oval cone. It's kind of a rounded square cone on the speaker, so I don't know if it might combine into something that's less than wanted. So I wonder how is my audio here? I don't know if you're getting a lot of puff noise. You probably are, because I'm trying to hold the mic at a 90 degree angle, and it's got one little microphone hole. It's that HM133 supercomputerized mic that you can control everything on the rig from the mic, and I have another mic for my 706 that's compatible with this. I might try it out, see what it's like, but maybe come back with an audio report. K2ZO N3CRT.
Charlie, I would not change anything. That sounds fine. You've got great audio, and I recognize your voice immediately. So whatever you're doing, just keep doing it. It sounds fine. And doing good. I'm not going to stay here too long because Noel is going to get on and run the tech net. Apparently Gordon is tied up or something here. So we'll say 73, have fun, and I'll talk to you later. And we'll wait around until the tech net starts up. N3CRT, K2ZO.
All right, Jim, yeah, thanks for reminding me there. Since moving out west, I haven't really been able to check into any of the nets. I really need to get something up on a mast, bring over my 2-meter beam and set something up. So, yeah, I'll be on the side here, too, probably check in. I'm heading over top of the hill towards Denville, so I might drop in and out, but I have a little better coverage out toward the west. I'll talk to you soon. K2ZO N3CRT.
Okay, very good. 73 Charlie.
NS2K Mobile.
Good evening, everybody. This is N2OEL, operated as K2BAR. Time for the Vera Technical Net. Unfortunately, Gordon has other commitments today, so I volunteered. And we're ready to start taking check-ins. When you call, please give your name, your call sign, and whether you have any questions. Let's start with anybody whose call sign begins with an N. Anybody whose call sign begins with any W, WA, WB, W-plane. Wow. Anybody whose call sign begins with a plain K.
K2BAR, this is K2ZO. No questions.
K2BAR, this is K2AMI, Tony. No questions.
For a minute there, I thought my whiz rig wasn't working.
Working, keep trying.
Okay, KA, KB, KC.
KO2OK.
Of course, Bennett. Anybody else? Anybody who hasn't checked in yet? Okay.
K2DSL, David.
Can I hope?
Doubled with David. K2DSL, David, no question. Did I double again? It's K2DSL, David, no question.
David, I'm running low power, so you should be able to easily get in over me. Anybody else? I got Jim, Tony, Bennett, David.
NS2K, no question at this point.
Okay, well, somebody has a question. I don't have any.
You can make up a question if you want.
I drove home, and I still don't remember the name of the website you gave me.
You're home now, I can give it to you. It's logmein.com, logmein.com. It always reminds me of low main, but it's logmein. I can send you an email if you want.
No, I'm home. I'm sitting in a den with the dog here, trying to decide. She hasn't decided whether she wants to play ball or eat dinner. But it's going to be boring tech then without about our friend Gordon. He always has an opinion on everything.
Ask a question if you want. It's not extremely technical.
Go ahead.
2BARK2DSL. So I have over 100 DXCCs confirmed now. I have over 100 on Logbook of the World and about another 17 or 18 through paper QSL cards. So I had actually sent an email off to Steve to ask him how he wanted to handle it or what he thought the best way is. But I'm just wondering, like, is it just best to do the, you know, 100% Logbook of the World one and ignore the QSL cards for now? Or should I do the QSL cards and then once Steve confirms those, apply for the others? Just wondering if any of you guys had any opinion on the best way to approach it. Back to that.
And I. Anybody else have an opinion?
K2 Zulu Charlie.
K2 Zulu Charlie. Recognize your first name, please.
Dave. K2 DSL. If you have 100 confirmed on Logbook of the World, they're already confirmed, so you don't need anything else other than to apply. So, you can always, the paper ones can still be, denied for one reason or another. But if you already have 100 confirmed on LOTW, that's all you need.
Yeah, Dave, I got that. I'm just wondering, I was going through, like, the fee schedule and how you pay for it all. And it looks like as long as you have your initial one, it's a certain fee. And then any subsequent ones, you then pay again to update. So I'm wondering if like the right way to do it is to give my cards to Steve that I know are not confirmed DXCCs for on Logbook of the World. Have him approve those or whatever the card checker does. And then have that go to the ARRL and then have the Logbook of the World one do it so I get a combined one. So that way I'm only paying once for, like, the 118 or, you know, even if it gets docked down to 116 or whatever it is.
You lost me. I don't know. I guess you better ask Steve.
Mr. Joyce, do you have an opinion on that?
I would call the ARRL and talk to the guy that runs it up there. Got his name right now, but that's what I would do. Years ago, the way you did it is you bundled your cards up, you sent them up, and with some return postage, and you had to fill out the form, and you had to put the list of all, and then they would check them off, and then they would give you credit. And they still have my form up there from 1968, I think.
Is K2DSL. I got the form off the website. I'm just not sure when you're doing both of them, like what the right way is to go about it. If I wanted to do the paper and the Logbook of the World one, because Logbook of the World's mindless simple to go do. The paper ones, I think I need to go through Steve and then he approves them and then the paper goes up to the ARRL and then I do it on, I don't know, something. I'll wait till Steve responds. I figured you guys know everything. I thought maybe you'd just tell me how it works. Back to that.
Okay. Anybody else?
Computers or internet?
And we doubled. Over to you, Jim.
I said when I did it, there was no computers or internet or spotting or anything else like that.
Through smoke signals. CQ through smoke signals. CQ. I got it.
It's explained pretty good in the Logbook of the World, I think, on one of their pages. Have you looked at their information on it? And it's cheaper if you buy the credits in advance. So you can buy like 100 credits for $20 or something. And I didn't do it correct the first time I applied. I sent in Logbook of the World and then about 17 paper cards. I mailed them up there. And they turned down two because I only sent the exact amount for 100, and they turned down a Maritime Mobile and one other. One was a dupe. So I didn't do it correct the first time, but I think if you just do the logbook of the world, it's the cheapest way to go, and you'll have to pay, I think, $12 for the certificate. And it's explained somewhere. I can't tell you exactly where, but one of their help pages.
Yeah, Dave, I went through it. I got it. I'm just not sure when you're doing both the best way to do it. But maybe Steve knows. I'll wait for Steve to respond. But yeah, there's a tremendous amount of help on there. But like most help FAQs, you already got to know the answer in order to understand it well. It's always written by somebody who knows the answer, so it was obvious to them. But thanks, and I'll see what Steve says. Otherwise, maybe I'll just do Logbook of the World and then follow up with the cards at a different time. Back to net, and somebody else has to make up a question.
This is K2 Zulu Charlie. I'd like everybody to know that Dave just made his triple play, the triple play award. Congratulations, Dave. K2 DSL, K2 BAR, this is K2 Zulu Charlie.
Okay, I have a question that I was going to ask Jim, actually, in a week or so. I have a SD614 station monitor that doesn't work quite right. We tested all the voltage points, and the symbol multitude of Kitnite seems to think definitely one of the horizontal sweep transistors, of which there's a pair, and probably one of the vertical. Well, the transistors are no longer easily available. They're discontinued. You can get them on eBay for like $20 a piece. And they told me I should replace them instead, but it's like... $80 or so for a thing that cost me $50. So I looked and I found a substitute. It's supposed to be a more robust transistor, but the leads are different. Now, this particular transistor that's there on the board, somebody, it comes out like a 3/16th of an inch. The leads make a sharp right turn to go down through the board, and the back of the transistor, of course, is in a heat sink. The question is, since the new transistors that I'm about to get any day now have different sequence of collector base emitter, how should I handle that? Should I just leave stuff straight up in the air, use copper wire, and just route it around? Maybe put a heat sink floating in the air? I don't know. Anybody feels like addressing that question?
This is Casey Zetto.
Go ahead, James.
Okay, on the Kenwood TS-940, I blew the drivers. And the drivers, of course, the same old story, no longer really available. And I did some research and I found a 12-volt 2N1969 in a CO220 package, but... that's the flat pack. I think that's the one it is anyway. These things are against the heat sink. And what I just did was bend the leads so that I could get them in the right holes. It looks kind of weird, but it works fine. I've replaced the two drivers.
Yeah, they come with reasonably long leads, huh? All I have to do is cross them over or whatever.
Yeah, I just carefully, actually I put some Teflon spaghetti that I had on them and then just crossed them over and made them fit, and it worked fine.
See, Rachel just gave me 300 feet of Teflon spaghetti, so I should be okay there.
Oh yeah, that's good stuff.
Okay, do we have any other questions? Somebody make up a question, please.
VAR from KC2ORX. I'm mobile headed home.
Desperate for a question, Rob. KC2ORX and KC2BAR.
Can't think of one for you, but I'm thinking.
Well, I got one that's possibly of interest. If one was to mount a CB whip has a 10-meter antenna on a big triple mag mount on the trunk of one's car. Should one put a shock spring in there, or should one leave the shock spring off?
To make it look fancy.
That was a double. The older person should go first.
Yep.
Okay, the younger person.
Noel, you keep doubling with whoever it is.
In the rear.
That sounds like an Ethernet. The computer waits a certain period of time and sends out a packet. And if it has a collision, it waits a random period of time and sends out another one. Anybody there who had an opinion, please come now.
This is K2ZO.
Go ahead, James.
Was your question, you're going to use a magnetic mount, using a CB whip, of course the CB whip being a little bit long, you need to shorten it to get it to 10 meters, but that, we all know that. It's on a mag mount, is that what it is?
Yeah, well, this mag mount, I think you could pick up the trunk of your car with it. It's got three, I believe they're 6-inch circular magnets, 6-inch across, and there's three of them on an iron plate, chrome plated, that's got to be a quarter inch thick. I mean, you wouldn't believe this plate. It's heavy. I don't think the plate's going to bend. Is that your question?
Well, the shock absorber, the spring is just the shock absorber. And, of course, if you have a side-mounted antenna bolted to your fender, it's a very good idea to have one of those, because when your antenna hits something, you're not going to dump all that energy into the fender of your car and wrinkle it. With it on a mag mount, it'll have a similar effect because it won't transmit too much shock to the mag mount and cause it to slide off the car. So it's probably not a bad piece of insurance.
Well, sounds good. I got a couple. I'm also going to put a quick disconnect. I liked Mr. Jim Jackson's idea of putting a piece of tubing in from the trunk through the back of the car, under the seat, and so forth. So when you want to put your antenna away, it's not in the way. It's sort of like right along the hump there. Mr. Jackson, how did you get yours? Oh, because you don't have a back seat, do you? Or do you?
Was that a question for me, NS2K?
I was just saying, I admired your method of storing your long whip antenna by using a piece of I guess it was electrical conduit. The question is, do you have a back seat? And if you did, how did you get that through from the truck area?
Oh, well, it's actually some of the plastic tubing for, refrigerator plumbing, you know, to put in water into a refrigerator. But I picked one that was big enough to let the ball go through at the end of the whip. And I managed to fish it through underneath the back seat. You know, it's a split back. So there's a space in between, and there's a path all the way through that's sufficiently straight that the whip will go through it. You know, I had been doing it without the advantage of the plastic, but quite often it hit things on the way through. Anyway, it could take undesired directions. Anyway, but yeah, this worked pretty good. I'm kind of tempted to get rid of the quick disconnects. I understand, of course, that's a problem in the modes when I have a high current node at the base of the antenna. It's a fairly lossy thing. I've got to come up with a scheme for bending the antenna forward rather than having to disconnect it quite so often. And it's okay.
Would it be possible for you to make a solid piece of pipe up a couple feet and then put your could disconnect there, so it wouldn't be actually at the node, but it would be, you know, 25, 30 inches up. Therefore, it would be not at the exact high current point, but somewhat off. Would that work?
I suppose it might. I don't know. I'd need better advice on that.
Could you bypass your joint with Anderson power poles or something, or would those have too much resistance?
Sorry, there was a competition for my attention.
We doubled.
Is that a question for me? I'm sorry, there was a competition here.
No, what I just simply said was, anybody else have any questions, anything else before we close the net? Anybody have checked in yet?
I could do a question, and it's okay.
Go ahead, James. We're welcome a question.
Very good. Question on my loop antenna. Now we've got the thing up. I think I need to shorten it because it's somewhat longer than it really wants to be for an 80. But the other thing that I've found is it's somewhat, I'm getting peculiar measurements when I try to look at the impedance of the thing. Even through this balanced tuner, it makes a difference if the tuner is grounded or not, which I'm kind of surprised because it's supposed to be a balanced output, unless because of the where I'm feeding it, which is, how should I say, it's nowhere near symmetrical at the feed point, if that's causing an imbalance that I either need to ignore or compensate for. Any comments?
K2ZO.
Go, Jimmy.
First of all, the loop really, as long as you can load it up, the loop doesn't care if it's a little too long or a little too short. But you can get some pretty wild reactances, especially at the end of that coax that's feeding it. Are you feeding it with coax?
No, it's a ladder line all the way to a balanced tuner, one of the, Palstar BT1500A.
Okay, well, still you can get some very wide changes of impedance, because remember at the frequency that it's cut for, the impedance of that thing is going to be about 150 ohms, so you're going to have some SWR, and of course, depending on the length of the feed line, multiples, you can get some really weird effects. You're trying to measure the impedance down at the feed point with a balanced antenna tuner? An antenna device, or what are you using?
Yeah, what I tried to do is put the MFJ gadget on the 50 ohm side of the antenna tuner, and then go to, say, a frequency of interest, and then try to tune the tuner so it looked like 50 ohms. Now, I don't know, intuitively it would seem like that ought to do something useful, but I didn't find anything that I liked.
Okay. Well, sometimes the MFJ can go do strange things. The important thing you want to do is to see if, first of all, the current is the same in both legs. And that's where a nice little 1-amp RF ammeter comes in. Very useful. That'll give you an indication of if you're doing something weird or something's broken or something's not right or something's shorted on one side causing grief. But even a number 47 light bulb, and low power in series will give you an indication of if you've got the same current in each set of the open wire line. But the old story goes with the open wire line where you can get some really wild impedances. If you take a look at some of the lengths, you can really get some very high impedances, which then all bets are off as far as the way anything's going to work. Just change the feed line. Add some additional on there. And if that doesn't do it, you just use an inductor on either side. That's what I used to do. and I used to change that inductor in the feed line where I had a couple of points where it was really hot, and I just didn't want to have the feed line all over the place just to get it so I could match it.
Yep. Okay. Well, some more ideas here on while I'm playing with this thing. I was taken back a little bit when the tuner came in damaged. Now I've gone through and fixed the thing. They replaced the broken meter, and I fixed the other internals that were bent. But it slowed me down getting the whole thing running. If I'd realized quite how much damage there was up at the beginning, I probably would have just sent it back, and yeah, I'm sure they would have replaced it. But we got in a little bit deep right off the beginning.
Any more questions? Any more comments? Well then, time to return this repeater to normal operation. Say 73 to everybody. And my ex-wife is making dinner. So it's time to go eat dinner. Have a great day. I return the repeater to normal operation.
K2Zulu Charlie, are you still around?
NS2K.
NS2K, how are you?
Okay, I got a phone call there and had to duck out. On the PALSTAR antenna tuner that you have, is that the one that uses the two rotary inductors and drives both of them, the 2L networks?
Yeah, it's got a transformer on the 50-ohm side, and then everything out beyond that is balanced. Everything is by two.
Yeah, that's the way you should do it. Because putting the transformer and just tuning it with a single-ended tuner, you can get some pretty wild things happening. And a way you can see that is with an RF ammeter. But I dumped the Henry into what I thought was a sufficiently large core, which is about 3 or 4 inches in diameter, and was feeding open wire line on 75 meters, and the core blew up. It actually shattered, went off like somebody fired a rifle.
Yeah, that could be kind of exciting, especially with your very expensive tube driving it.
Yeah, that was interesting. But the real answer, of course, is do it the way you're doing it there. It's interesting that the MFJ didn't get you there where you want to be. What did you do? You set the MFJ for 50 ohms and then adjusted the tuner to see if you could get there?
Well, I'm using the antenna analyzer, which, of course, would ideally see 50, where the transmitter would be, and then go out through the tuner, which was connected to, I don't know what it is, maybe 30 feet of balanced line to the loop. And, you know, crank to my heart's content, I never found anything that resembled 50 ohms, you know, looking at it that way.
Okay, but if you were to take your radio and put it on low power, of course, into the tuner, and then adjust the tuner, could you effectively get a match that way?
I can't say that I've really tried. Yeah, I suppose I could put it low power. I'll run it through an external SWR meter so I can watch it in real time, both sides of it, and play with it that way.
Doesn't the PALSTAR tuner have a SWR bridge?
Well, that's true too. It does have one. Now it has one. I had half of one originally. one of the movements was broken right off at one end of the armature.
Oh, okay. Yes, I remember you said it had come down. Yeah, it it's really important when you use a tuner these days, especially with the solid-state radios. You know, it's nice to have a tuner with two indicators on it, because if you have a single indicator and you're looking at SWR, and as you effectively get a mismatch and the radio cuts back, you think the SWR is going down. So sometimes you can get fooled if you've not done a whole lot of it, and I just recently helped somebody who was being fooled that way. What he was doing was adjusting the tuner so that his radio cut back and not realizing it.
Yeah, that's not not real useful. Yeah, and potentially dangerous to the radio, of course.
But he was using a single indicator meter, so he's sitting there turning the tuner, outputting from the radio, and looking at the reflected, and he sees the reflected go down. So he keeps turning and turning and turning until the reflected goes way down. Well, the reason it went down is that the radio cut back because the SWR was so high.
Yeah, yeah, obviously, you need to look at both directions and, you know, peak for maximum and minimum, at roughly the same time.
Well, you can do it, you know, if you had some experience, you could do it with a single meter, but, he didn't have the experience to do it. And of course, the simplest way is to tune the tuner until you hear the noise go up, you know. And then you know you're getting close. But, you're feeding it with open wire. When you say open wire, is that 450 you're using?
Yeah, it's 450-ohm ladder, and then into one of those little plastic H thingies. And off it goes from there. Now, on one side of it, it goes fairly low to the ground. I'm saying maybe less than 20 feet from the ground. And then the other side of it heads way up, you know, 60 feet up in the air, and makes most of the trip around, and then comes back close. And it's the feed point is close to one end of this low part.
Okay, but you do have continuity all the way around. It is indeed the true loop.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. If you measure DC around it, it's got DC continuity.
Okay. We feed the loop on field day with a one-to-one current type balance and just coax. The reason is that on the frequency we're using it, having a high SWR means absolutely nothing. If you look at that chart in the antenna book where it shows the increase in loss due to SWR versus frequency for particular feed lines, and you can see that for most of the HF bands, it doesn't make that much difference. Then you start getting up to 15 and 20 meters. Yeah, it can make, you know, an 8-to-1 SWR in 10 meters can eat up a lot of power. But it means nothing on 80 meters, believe it or not.
Well, where the line has relatively little loss, you're mostly worried about current or voltage notes, I suppose.
Now, that's the thing that comes to get you with the open wire line. I've experimented with that in a couple of different ways, especially when I was having problems with RF. And what I ended up doing was making a balanced feed line with just 75-ohm leads. And I paralleled up two 75-ohm leads. I left the shield open at the top where they came to the loop, and down at the bottom, where they went into the antenna tuner, the two coaxes for each side of the loop, and then the shield was grounded. And I found that was very, very effective in keeping RF out of the computer and out of the shack and everything else on feeding an open wire fed line. Now, you can extend that a little bit further by just going outside with those two pieces of coax and then hooking on over to the open wire line, and not bringing the open wire into the shack. That